Hello and welcome to another edition of My Stack. I'm Steve Saunders, and I will be your host for this little audio cast that I do, hopefully a weekly thing. What My Stack is about is I just go through a stack of comic books I have sitting around here that I've read, and then some of I haven't read yet. I'll just go through them and let you know what I think of them and what I might think of the upcoming stuff that I'm going to read that's sitting in my stack. I got a pretty big stack going on here. Not just in advanced PDFs I receive, but in actual comic books that I purchase and receive in the mail. It's some pretty crazy stuff. First off, I'd like to kick off this audio cast with a favorite of mine, The Walking Dead, which is a zombie comic, as the name implies. And what The Walking Dead is about, essentially, typical zombie apocalypse story of survival. Well, sorry, I mean typical scenario, but atypical storytelling. I wouldn't say it really covers any new ground, but what Robert Kirkman does here is some pretty excellent stuff. Definitely yanks at the treads some interesting ground as far as psychological. It's more of a psychological horror than anything. And really, it touches more on the horrors of what humans do to one another, as opposed to brain-eating zombies. Walking Dead number 34 continues the story after the last couple of issues I read. Of course, 33, 32, one of which had a horrific torture scene. Some people are saying that, you know, they're losing steam here with the story, but... And this issue gives a little bit of credence to that. It could have been better, but I don't expect every issue to be awesome or anything. I gotta trademark that word. I don't expect it to be absolutely amazing each time around. As a matter of fact, this is a pretty solid issue, with good art and good story, and it brings the story along nicely. The only thing, and I was talking to someone else earlier about this, talking to a friend earlier on the phone, and he's right, this huge splash page of the prison was pretty much as good towards the end. Well, I'm giving something away, aren't I? But anyway, and then the following panels of what's going on, it just seems like filler to me, and it was totally unnecessary. Then after letters page, there's a story about Dwayne and his dad, the two fellows that were left behind in a house, and it's a Christmas story, and someone told me that it's a reprint, which is kind of disappointing if that's the case. Still, good issue. I enjoyed it immensely. Well, not as immensely as I would have liked to. I enjoyed it nonetheless. Next up, I like to talk about the Lone Ranger out on Dynamite Entertainment. Lone Ranger is written by Brett Matthews and with great art by Sergio Cariello, and Dean White being the colorist, with some great covers by John Cassidy, who apparently also does the art direction. This right here is the Lone Ranger number 4 in a 6-issue series. It's pretty much his origin tale. This isn't exactly for kiddies. I mean, some people think that, oh, Lone Ranger, it's a bunch of it's for kids. Not really. This is more along the lines of something that myself and my father could really enjoy, be it both of us being longtime Lone Ranger fans, and it's not too much exposition going on here. Not too little. It has just enough what's going on. Some stuff has some pages have some dialogue or monologue that explains things, but really it's actually a perfect mix of illustration and exposition, and I would say that this certainly blows the whole theory that comics are becoming more decompressed as opposed to compressed issues, more pictures, it's a story spread over a whole bunch of issues to explain something that could have been explained in one issue like 20 years ago. No, the Lone Ranger is a great example of what a perfectly balanced comic book should be. I really, really enjoyed this issue, and things are starting to heat up, and it's really an underrated comic. I would say this is one of the most underrated comics out there. I don't understand why it's not selling more than 25,000 issues. Maybe it is, but I'm thinking it isn't because no one else I know is really reading it. Lone Ranger, out on Dynamite. If you enjoy adventure and enjoy westerns, you will enjoy this issue. Awesomely written, awesomely illustrated, and I'm going to try to stop using the word awesome for the rest of this audio cast. Go to www.dynamiteentertainment.com to read more what's going on. And of course, there'll be a trade paperback coming out of this as well. Now, next up, quick word, The Incorrigible PvP, issue number 31 on an Image, also from Scott Kurtz. What made this issue extremely special to me, because there's an ad on the back here for the 850-page, pure awesome, hey, they said it, not me, of the Madman Gargantua, complete, unabridged, gargantuan, it's freaking huge, and it's limited to 2,500 copies. I'm going to be getting that, aw yeah, and that's them, not me saying that. Oh yeah, PvP, well, it's a bunch of reprints from the website. I enjoy reading it in print. I think they said that last audio cast. So this has the Brent transformed into Skull the Troll bit in it. But yeah, there you have it. PvP, always fun to pick up. Some people don't think it's worth it. Another comic I received that is actually surprised me was The Nightclub. I got issue number 4, so I don't have the backstory here, but I'd say this is 3 issues well spent. It's essentially covering an alien conspiracy and devils and chosen ones. It's got pretty decent art, pretty decent story and flow. If anything, the strong point of this comic is the pacing. That's The Nightclub. I suggest you check it out. And like I said, this is number 4, and I'm going to be picking up the first 3 issues to read it, so I liked it that much. It's certainly one of those little comics out there that's enjoyable, out on Image. Last week I talked about, I flipped through Nightwolf the Price and said I liked it. Well, I finally got to sit down and enjoy this book, Nightwolf the Price, out on Devil's Due Publishing. I really, really like this, so much that I read the rest of the Nightwolf comic books, and I am now a fan of Nightwolf. I also like the art, which is reminiscent of photorealistic art, but done in black and white. It's obviously not copied off of anything. No one's pulling a Greg Land here. Man, I got to quit slamming on that guy, because I really do like Greg Land's art, but he's apparently really popular to slam on. But this is how a werewolf story should be told. And so big, big old kudos to Stephen L. Antzak, the writer, and Nick Marienkovich, the artist. You guys are doing a terrific job with Nightwolf the Price. Let's get back to Dynamite here and cover Red Sonja, She-Devil with a Sword. Out from Dynamite Entertainment, I do believe this is their strongest seller, and rightfully so. I'm a huge Red Sonja fan. I try to read this as much as possible. I have the trades. I got my wife to read it. I have, of course, I buy the monthly titles. It's got stunning, stunning art. And look at this cover. Oh, it's sexy. I have the one where she's putting on the helmet, the Kevin Nolan cover. Now, simple, sexy. That is one of the reasons why Red Sonja kicks so much ass, you see, is because the men she's fighting are totally stunned by her beauty, and or maybe they're just pervs, and she kicks their ass. And she's already a kick-ass fighter, so this is cover B. Cover A by Sean Chen looks really nice, and cover C by Homs. Homs? Is it Homs or Home? Man, someone's got to tell me this stuff. They should have, like, a pronunciation guide. But anyway, the Homs, we'll just say that, does cover C, and then there's cover D by Andriano Battista. There's a foil edition by Frank Bruner, and incentive number 1, incentive number 2. Man, everyone comes with, like, a zillion covers per issue. Don't really care for that very much, but whatever. So, anyway, The art in this book is by Homs, and the writer by Michael Avenoming, and the colors by Vincius Andrade, and which the colors are great in here too. It's just, this is one of the best comics on the market, folks. Like I said, Red Sonja is great. They do say it's based on a heroine created by Robert E. Howard, which isn't exactly correct. Red Sonja, Sonja with a J, S-O-N-J-A, was actually created by Roy Thomas and Barry Windsor Smith. When she first appeared in Conan the Barbarian number 23 from Marvel Comics. The actual Red Sonja with a Y-A, S-O-N-Y-A, appeared in Robert E. Howard's story, Shadow of the Vulture, which first appeared in the Magic Carpet magazine. That's introduced the character of Red Sonja of Rogatino, and she kind of served as a template of sorts or an inspiration to the Red Sonja for Marvel Comics. She had absolutely no relation to the Conan the Barbarian and anything like that. She was never in the Hyborian Age. I guess they have to give money to the Robert E. Howard estate, but for Red Sonja, but to be honest, Red Sonja really is a creation of Roy Thomas and Barry Windsor Smith, in my mind. And Robert E. Howard just provided the name inspiration and provided the Hyborian world in which Conan takes place, and of course Red Sonja taking place. Not that I'm complaining. I just thought I'd point that out, you know, be the know-it-all here. Like I said, though, I have the Marvel comics, I have the Red Sonja Dynamite comics, and don't forget, we got Savage Tales coming out, which they all star Red Sonja so far, and man, there's some sweet-looking stuff here. You just, Savage Tales, gotta get that. That's something I'm gonna be getting. Anyway, Red Sonja, number 19, it was a great issue, kicking off the Animals story arc. In part one, it sets things up, because the god of Kulan-Goth is coming. Comes for the world. Introduces some great stuff in here. You just got to pick it up. If you like sword and sorcery and low fantasy, or fantasy in general, and you like Red Sonja or Conan, you need to discover why Red Sonja is such a strong seller, and why Conan the Barbarian is such a strong seller, but that's out on Dark Horse. If you're not reading Conan and you like fantasy, then there's something wrong with you. Your parents must have done horrible things to you as a child, locked you in closets with cats that probably crapped on your Cheerios with your teddy bear. Fact is, Red Sonja, Conan, but I was talking about Red Sonja. I'm kind of getting away with myself here, or get away from myself. Pardon me. Man, I really got to develop a script or something. Next up, I'd like to discuss Knights of the Dinner Table magazine, number 122. If you're not familiar with Knights of the Dinner Table, it's a comic book that covers BA and his Knights of the Dinner Table, a gaming group that's a tabletop D&D Dorkfest group that sits around and it basically covers their adventures that they have while they're gaming. Not necessarily their gaming adventures. If you want those, get Knights of the Dinner Table Illustrated. Knights of the Dinner Table Illustrated. But there is a serial story going on here that's covered every month, and there's some side stories involving other characters, and then the Black Hands, which, of course, are another gaming group. And then that's half of this thick bad boy of a magazine, and the second half, I mean, it's still comic book size for all you size freaks. The other half has gaming news, gaming stuff, stuff for Hackmaster, the role-playing game, stuff for the 3.5 edition Dungeons & Dragons, generic stuff. Looking at comics. Hey, my man Tony over here. Of course, there's a Gamer's Rant at the Movies, which by Noah Antweiler from the Spoonie Experiment. He's got some very funny movie reviews. Even if you don't agree with him, he's funnier than hell. There's all sorts of stuff in here. So if you like nerd comics, and you like gaming, and you like comics in general, then you should be reading Knights of the Dinner Table. Seriously. It's effing awesome. Hootie-hoo! Alright, I got this a while back, and I need to cover it at some point. Sea of Red, Volume 3, The Deadlights. If you haven't been reading Sea of Red, well, wow. Vampire Pirates, okay? Vampire Pirates. Are you listening now? Vampire Pirates. Yes. Impressive, isn't it? Now, I'm going to describe the back of this, I'm going to read the back of this, which describes the book, this particular trade paperback, which collects, the last issues. Sea of Red only ran for 13 issues. Lesser Blackthroat's eternal struggle against the ancient sect of the Sanguinians is lost when a plague of vampirism is unleashed upon the world. Although he agrees to join Blackthroat on a mission to murder the man responsible, Marco Esperanza must first come to terms with his culpability in the coming dark days. However, soon after discovering his true motivations, it becomes clear to Marco that he is not in control of his actions, and his presence has been placed the crew of the Black Galleon in grave peril. Or is that peril? In grave peril. That sounds better. Within the hearts of all men lies the potential for valiant heroism and treacherous villainy. No man is a hero, no man is a villain. We are all capable of either. A lifespan of centuries only compounds this inherent duality. Can the struggle to overcome centuries of bile and bitterness be won? To all things comes an end, even for the immortal. This will kick your ass faster than you can say there can only be one. This collects 9 through 13 of, as it says, the groundbreaking series. I agree. The art might take some getting used to. I remember I bitched about the art in a review I did for SilverBulletComicBooks.com. But Rick Remender, or Remender, is it Remender or Remender? See, you need pronunciation guides. And Kieran Dwyer does the story, and then the story script is by Rick. Great team. Awesome stuff. I would really have preferred Francesco Francavilla's art. He just did the layouts, and Paul Harmon did the art, the pencils, inks, colors, and layouts for Chapter 10. It's really rough, and I said like it's like done in like charcoal. But it's really dark art, and it actually fits the story. And the more I read, now that I've read all 13 issues of Sea of Red, I can appreciate the art a lot more, and so I take back a lot of what I said about the art sucking. I don't think it sucks. I think the art really suits the story just fine, though I still think it could be better. I would still not rate the art that highly, but the talent of Harmon, Paul Harmon, is not lost on me. So, Paul, if you're listening to this podcast somehow, well, I'm really sorry. I'm not meaning to insult you. You did a good job. It's just not my bag of tea. Wait, not my cup of tea. Not my bag. But I'm not telling you to clutch my bag, and that's a good thing. So anyway, the Deadlights. There is a hardback coming out, which I'm going to get, of Sea of Red. I will go out and buy that. That's how much I like this story. No, they got a lot of my Sea of Red comics comp to me. I will go out and purchase the hardback. It's the collection of all 13 issues. Now, what else do I have here? Oh yes, Ghost Rider Trail of Tears number 1, written by Garth Ennis, and the art, with art done by Clayton Crane. Now, they were the same team on Ghost Rider Road to Damnation. This is more of a prequel to Road to Damnation. It's covering the character of Travis Parham, who is a survivor of a battle from the American Civil War, and he's rescued and brought back to health. And this is it basically goes on and explains like the origin of the Ghost Rider and the demon that makes up the Ghost Rider and all this stuff. And this is the art in this. Clayton Crane. I loved Road to Damnation. I absolutely loved it. It was what I have been looking for in a Ghost Rider story for years. Years and years. I love Ghost Rider. I read the original comics, the original Johnny Blaze comics from the late 70s. One of the first comics I ever read was Ghost Rider. I learned how to read reading Amazing Spider-Man, Star Wars, and X-Men. And once I learned how to read well, I read Ghost Rider. Man, I love Ghost Rider, okay? I'm a huge Ghost Rider fanboy, but I'm going to get back. Well, I'll bitch about Ghost Rider later, because I got Ghost Rider, the finale issue of the other volume, series, whatever, coming up next. Let me talk about this, though. Ghost Rider Trail of Tears. Garth Ennis is in top form here with his writing. Now, I love Garth Ennis. Anyone who talks to me knows I'm a big Garth Ennis fanboy and all this other crap. But I have to admit, like with Garth Ennis or like Warren Ellis or Alan Moore or any prolific, busy writer that's out there, or even Dan Abnett for that matter, you know, who I love, absolutely love, and I should just, okay, awesome, absolutely love. There's still, like, I'm crossing those off. I can't say those anymore. So, anyway, with Garth Ennis, there's always going to be a guy who has an ass for a face, you know, or has some kind of ass thing. I mean, it was in Road to Damnation, the dude had his head shoved up his own ass, and, of course, there was Arseface from Preacher, and I'm sure some ass-faced dude's going to pop up in The Boys. Now, there's usually something like that. Well, there was the ass thing. There was the hamster in the ass with The Boys. This something with stuff in people's asses. Usually their heads, but hamsters maybe as well. Or this is like a Garth and his trademark. And, there was Fuckface from the Fury Max series, too. These are like running things and kind of like running gags with Garth Ennis. I'm kind of hoping he doesn't do this with Trail of Tears. Now, Trail of Tears is more for like a teen audience. It's not a mature comic at all. So Garth Ennis doesn't really seem to touch on any of his trademarks, if you will, in this issue. Solid, stellar storytelling from Garth Ennis. This is some of his best work, in my opinion. It might not be his most triumphant work, because it's really just a setup issue. But the pacing, how it works with Crane's art, or how Crane's art worked with Ennis' story, this is some excellent stuff. I don't know if Garth Ennis knew. If Garth knew this is going to be one of his best works, but at least, you know, someone like me is going to go, hey, that's awesome. Oh, damn it. Wait, you hear that? That's for saying awesome again. Ah, well, we won't count that second one. I don't know if you knew that critics like myself, and I use the word critic very loosely, would think that this would be so great. This is a great issue. And the dialogue, I'm looking at it right now, the dialogue is just amazing. And it ends on a note, a very ominous note. That is for certain. Pick it up. Ghost Rider Trail of Tears, number one, out in Marvel Comics. It is a terrific Ghost Rider story. If you're looking for the origins of the Ghost Rider from the mid-19th century, post-Civil War at this point, since the Civil War stuff was only covered a little bit, then taking place about 1865, 1866, something around there. They just talked about how the war just ended, so probably 1865. Check it out. Next up, we have Ghost Rider number 94, which is the finale of that series that started off, remember back in the early 90s, with Danny Ketch as the Ghost Rider and all of that? I was really into it then, for about 20 issues or so. Maybe 25 issues, I can't remember. I really liked the new Ghost Rider. I liked his new look. I liked the new style. I liked all that. And then I lost track because I started really hating it, because they found Johnny Blaze, and then they said Johnny Blaze and Danny Ketch were related, like they're brothers, and then the Spirit of Vengeance, and it wasn't Zarathos that was Ghost Rider, it was the Spirit of Vengeance, and there was like a family curse, and blah, 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 blah. Irritating. I found it extremely irritating. Anyway, they just released the Ghost Rider finale. Although, remember that glow-in-the-dark cover? Was that number 15? It was a glow-in-the-dark cover? Pretty awesome. Anyway, so they did Ghost Rider number 94, which is how many years after 93, after it got canceled? I'm not going to read the introduction here, but it does say, thanks to long memories and efforts of a couple frankly crazy fans, that final issue of the previous Ghost Rider series has at long last been completed and is collected herein, along with the previous issue number 93, to bring newer readers up to speed. Okay. I really hate to slam a comic book on my audio cast here. I'm also a huge fan of Ghost Rider. Now, I got to give these guys credit. They do give us a great overview of Ghost Rider here on a nice splash page, and starts with the wedding of the Ghost Rider in the underworld, and then I have to see art that was best left in the 90s. People like to slam on Rob Liefeld, and rightfully so in most cases, as his art compared to many current artists isn't that great, but the art here isn't that much better. The arms all look like fat tree trunks, and everyone has the same face, except for like the aliens and stuff, or whatever these creatures are, demons. I really had a hard time reading this, and there's parts where the art looks kind of like, reminds me of Rob Liefeld a little bit, but with less dynamic, quote-unquote dynamic expressions. It's very 90s popular comic book art. Not that bad. I'm not slamming the art too much here. I mean, there's some painful stuff, mainly in the arms. The arms are just horrific, especially from the side shots of the arms. It looks like this book I'm looking at, Danny Ketch right here, the one where he says, "You abandoned us, left to rot." Was that page 13? Oh man! It looks like someone took a big dump of big stuff in his arm, and it's not so bad. And then there's like issue number 94, and I had a hard time just keeping up with the story, keeping interest in the story, and the marriage of the Ghost Rider. And by the end of everything, I realized that maybe it was best this was left back in the 90s. Now, I would like to give a lot of kudos to the team at Marvel for putting this together, at least for the fans, because I know a lot of people really like that run of Ghost Rider. I liked at least a quarter of it, or a third of it. This could have been a lot better. The art after, when issue number 94 hits, the art does get improve a bit, etc. Let me find the credits here. It's written by Ivan Velez Jr. and penciled by Javier Salteras, and inked by Mark Teixeira and Javier Salteras and Klaus Janson. So, you know, it's a good, and the colors look good, but honestly, might have been best left in the past. Just saying. However, to those of you guys, all this huge team that put this together, bravo! Thank you for taking this and putting, like, this is like 9 years later, you put together a sequel issue, finally give everyone their finale that they need on what I consider to be a pretty convoluted and messed up storyline, and not messed up in a good way. We're not talking like messed up in like a Garth Ennis or Warren Ellis kind of way. We're talking kind of just not that great. But I don't know. Maybe I'll read it in the future and like it more. It's just the art really bugged me, and I thought this could have been much better. I'm going to quit yapping about this particular Ghost Rider issue. If you're a fan of that particular run of Ghost Rider, this is a must to get because, well, it finishes everything up. It's the finale. How can you not want that? Enough about Ghost Rider. How about Impaler, out on Image Comics? Have any of you read Impaler yet? What I have right in front of me here is issue number 3. Impaler is a story that is written by William Harms and drawn by Nick Postick with Nick Marinkovic. Now, got this as an advanced PDF, and I have to say, I love Impaler. I've read the first two issues, and they were a lot of fun. And this issue, good stuff. Basically, here's a little blurb from ImageComics.com. NYC homicide detective Victor Daly lost his wife to cancer, and now he's a barely functioning alcoholic. Knowing that he needs a change of scenery, Daly has decided to retire early and move away from NYC, New York City. Unfortunately for Daly, a ravenous vampire army has launched an all-out attack against Manhattan, and no one is getting out alive. Well, that was a description from number 2 that I just pulled up, but fact is, Impaler's a great take on this, and with Vlad, the original Vlad the Impaler, Vlad Tepes, coming, you know, he's covered in issue number 1 a little bit, and he fights vampires, interestingly enough. So this of course focuses on Victor, Detective Victor, and you're of course going to focus on the other Vlad Tepes. And this is just a fun comic. I think that everyone who likes vampires and likes police stories and just straight out horror and action with some terrific art, actually. The art's not the best in the world, but let me say, it's very fitting for the story. I guess you could say accentuates the story nicely. I can't really think of anybody else working on this with a different style, and just some of the paneling. The paneling is great. It's very paneling is very artistic, which I guess is kind of like that's a lame way to describe it. Paneling is done very artistically and with some imagination, but not too much to make it look all weird. Just some slanting to some of the paneling, and then of course, the violence is the violence is very keen. You gotta enjoy this. Whew. I'll be writing up a review of this for SilverBulletComicBooks.com, hopefully this week. I hope. Sorry, Mr. Harms, if I get a little bit sidetracked, but it's going to get a favorable review for me. This is certainly a 4 out of 5 comic. If you want to know, it's the 4 out of 5 bullets. Oh, I'm just looking at it right now. Cop decapitation. Oh man. Oh dear. Decapitations run rampant in this comic, and there's just blood. And this little scene is like off-panel. There's a scene of like some snow. I think it's snow with a helmet. Yeah, that's snow with a blurred effect and a helmet with blood coming out of it. It's like an off-panel thing. It's like a part of the page instead of on the panel. Brilliant. Just the layout is excellent. That's like one of the best things about this comic is the layout, and then the art. Well. The best thing about this comic is the story, and then there's the layout, and then the art. I do believe this is actually one of my favorite comics to read right now. It wasn't my favorite comic to read very much until this issue with the very stark, shadowy art and whatnot. So, if you want a good story that's got vampires and creepy stuff and lots of violence, and it has a great roller coaster of a story, I highly recommend Impaler. Seriously, kids. You want to read Impaler. Got that?
Impaler.
Okay? All right. Last up on my actually read list is Punisher number 44. Now, some of you, this is Punisher Max, the one not for the kids, like you should have a kid reading the Punisher comics. I mean, come on. When I watched the old Spider-Man TV show, you know, those Fox cartoons or whatever, and Spider-Man showed up. Where's that X-Men? No, I think it was Spider-Man when he showed up. That was laughable. The Punisher is not for kids at all. Not even the current Punisher War Journal, which is more kiddified, if you will. a different kind of Punisher. I'm talking about the Garth Ennis Punisher that has astounding art by Alain Medina. And the thing is with Garth Ennis Punisher is right now we're on the Widowmaker story arc, part two. One thing you have to understand about the Garth Ennis Punisher is really this is Garth Ennis has stated a few times, I believe, that this is like he was born to do the Punisher, and you know what? He is. I'm a longtime Punisher fan. I've liked a Punisher fan since I was of an age that you're not supposed to like the Punisher. I knew who the Punisher was before he appeared in comics in his own series. I remember it from like reading from Spider-Man reprints or Spider-Man issues or whatever he popped up in. My dad liked the Punisher because he was a lot like the Executioner. The Executioner? I got that guy right? Executioner. Anyway, come and correct me if I'm wrong. But the fact is, you got the Punisher here. Garth Ennis owns the Punisher. He is the Punisher. When I found out Garth Ennis was writing the Punisher years back, I was so excited because he was one of my favorite, you know, working on Hellblazer. And well, I already gushed enough about Garth Ennis. But the thing is, he's writing the Punisher. He is the Punisher. Not that Matt Fraction's doing a bad job on Punisher War Journal. I really do stand by what I've said about Matt Fraction and that Punisher. But that is a different Punisher. That is a Punisher living in a world of superheroes. Punisher Max, they're the only other character I've seen pop up, really, in the Max series of any note is Nick Fury, you know? And yeah, that's it. There's no superpowers. It's not. Although I hear it's still the Marvel 616 regular universe. You don't see anybody else. So it's, you know, it's grim. It's gritty. It has the F word every page. And this opens up with Frank Castle showing up at a house. And this is what he says. Let me get my Punisher voice. Ann Larson, I know you and your husband have been shooting pornographic films with your children. I want to make this as easy on them as I can. Invite me in. Now, I don't know how it's going to sound. Might make me sound pretty lame, but who knows? But pretty much these parents, it just opens up with a scene that, you know, when you say F yeah in a comic book, it's usually because Captain America saves the day or Nick Fury saves us from Hydra or whatever. When you say F yeah here if you've got a really violent sense of justice about things some days, you know? It's graphic. I mean, I'm going to tell you straight. I'm not spoiling anything. He kills this couple. He sets the kids up in a room, and then he just murders them. I mean, that's the Punisher. You know, he's... and then he says something, of course, very cynical about having to come back for the older kids, because in 20 years, you know, it's grim. This is a grim comic. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like Ennis had this little intro. It's like, for those of you tuning in right now, I like to point out that the Punisher is a very grim guy, and if you don't have a grim sense of humor and a grim sense about things, then you're just going to have to stay away from this grim, grim, grim comic book. This is one of my favorite comics to read right now. I read the Punisher almost obsessively. Then we're introduced to a cop who looks remarkably like, as another reviewer said, Samuel L. Jackson. Anyway, basically, the story arc, though, is like mafia, mob, organized crime wives, the widows of these guys the Punisher has killed, and really, man, his body count is pretty freaking high. They're getting together, and they're gonna kill the Punisher, and that's like the plan. And so far, they seem to be doing, not, you know, they got to work together and stuff, and they doesn't look like they're doing that great. These widows, that's the whole Widowmaker thing, because, you know, the Punisher kills folks, and there you go. And it seems like the Punisher is not only trying to avenge his family anymore that were killed, but he's trying to kill people, you know, or stop people from becoming him. He wants to stop other people from being Punishers as well. It's like he knows what he does is wrong as well. Ennis really gets into the whole psychology of the character here that, you know, that I don't think very few other writers could. Matt Fraction comes close, but it's not as good as Garth Ennis. And that's no offense to Mr. Fraction. You're a freaking awesome writer. Aw, man. There's another awesome. There are some kids at Newsarama to be happy to hear that. Ah, screw them. So, anyway, yeah, totally. It's Matt Fraction does a great job with the Punisher and Punisher War Journal, and I hope that's around for a while, and he's on that title for a long time. But let's go to Punisher with Garth Ennis, and it's the Punisher. It's like he could walk off the comic and beat your ass, you know? So that said, let me go over some, oh yeah, Punisher number 44, pick it up. Let's go over some stuff that I haven't read yet. There's a lot of stuff here I haven't read yet. I'm going to go over this really, really fast. My buddy Bart Thompson over at Approbation Comics sent me a whole bunch of stuff to read, which I will read, Bart. Do not worry. Like The Evil Inside, which looks pretty cool. Chi-Sai preview looks pretty awesome. I like the cover. Reminds me of the old Psylocke, actually. Old Psylocke? I think it's old Psylocke. Anyway, but great cover. Myriad, which looks very interesting. Chaos Campus, Sorority Girls versus Zombies. Special edition preview. Flipping through this. Great art. Total, what do they call that? Cheesecake? I can't remember. But there's some... This art should appease men, specifically. Oh, hey, look, LiveJournal made it in here. Well, that's great. But this looks pretty fun. I'm looking forward to Chaos Campus just because Sorority Girls versus Zombies. Come on, man. How can you not want to see that? The Lazarus Factor, which looks great. It has some very interesting art. I like new art. I don't like seeing the same art over and over again, but this is very interesting stuff. Not interesting in a bad way, interesting in a good way. Reminding me of the older days, the 90s, they were like, let's come up with an art style in the 90s that's going to really mess with people. That's good. And then Vampires Unlimited, which looks pretty good. And Amour and the Evil Inside comic, you got to give it the approbation. They come up with some stuff that's definitely different and sexy and interesting and new and cutting edge. And I can't wait to sit down and read all of these. So I'll be doing that very soon. Bart. Another thing I got from Dynamite here is Borderline by Eduardo Risso and Carlo Trio. I think it's Trio, or is it Trillo? Sorry. The art here looks very basic and dark, black and white. Looks very, very interesting. It says about here on the back, it's a mature-rated comic. Borderline is a dystopian future brought to life by two immensely talented Argentine creators, translated into English for the first time, and it's about time. While you read it, pay attention, consider the words, get lost in the pictures, you may just hear something. As bleak as the story may seem to be, it has a heart beating. And that's from Brian Azzarello, the quote on the back. Looks really, this volume one looks very interesting, and I am highly interested in reading this. I can't wait to read it. And I got a split comic here. You flip it over, and it's two issues, but it's really one. And that's of The Elephant Men, of which I have number six sitting around, too, and I need to read this, and this has two stories, The Last Thing I Remember and Abandoned by God, and art looks great, and it looks quite interesting, actually, and I actually cannot wait to read that as well. Image Comics, well, that's out on Image, by the way. Image Comics also, I have also received Truth, Justin in the American Way, with great, of course, great power, no responsibility. This is number 5 of 5, and it looks like a comedy. Comedic art. Comedic lines. Oh, wait. Comedic ending. Oh, and it's written by Scott Kurtz. Did I get that right? Yeah, written by Scott Kurtz and Aaron Williams. So, this looks funny. Looking forward to reading that. And, of course, we got the Pirates of Coney Island, which, of course, this is the Cherries of Coney Island. And this looks like Pirates of Coney Island, like the last issue. It looks, looks interesting, to say the least. And, of course, we got G.I. Joe, America's Elite, number 19. I'm always up to read some G.I. Joe. This is going to be fun. Yeah, I mean, come on. It's got Duke and Cobra Commander and all that stuff. And the G.I. Joe comics out on Devil's Due Publishing are always fun to read. And then I got this. I got this graphic novel from Creative Elements, which is creatively spelled Elamentz, and that is Foreshadow, F-O-R-E, Shadow, Full Speed. Now, I haven't read this yet. I'm planning to, but it looks to me, I have no idea what this is. I flipped it open, and I just realized that it's an anthology. Yeah, it's a bunch of stories, and some of the stuff looks pretty interesting. Like, we got Vigilance and Agilic, and the art varies drastically. And some of it actually looks photocopied, has a photocopied quality to it. We're talking, this is about as homebrew as it gets in many cases. Some of the art is just laughable, and some of it's pretty good. And I don't know about the story, but I'm hopefully next time I can talk about this more and tell you about it. It's only $10. I mean, you get a pretty thick thing here. And, of course, the back has, of course, some questions that are answered. So, yeah. I don't know. Looks to be interesting. I'm always willing to check out new independent stuff. And I'm glad I got it in the mail. So we'll be checking that out this more in the future. And hopefully next audiocast or the one after, I can cover it or in something else. Like maybe IndieFile or All the Rage or something. Also, there, of course, if you haven't heard, I cover it in All the Rage over at SilverBulletComicBooks.com. I profiled Kid Cosmos Kidnapped by Jim Starlin, who also answered a few questions for me. So if you want to go over there and check it out, please do. Kid Cosmos, out on Dynamite, a lot of fun to read, a good all-ages comic. And, of course, another really good all-ages comic to read is Shazam, the Monster Society of Evil number 1, out on DC. And that is an excellent comic to read for kids. Just trust me on that one. If you've got kids and you're listening to this, go out to the store, buy that comic, give it to your kid to read, provided that they're of that comic reading age, i.e. 3.5 or older, and get them started on comic books. Or if they're already in the comic books, let them check out some cool Shazam. I mean, it's some pretty good stuff. And it's all done by Jeff Smith. Trust me. We had a slugfest over at Silver Bullet, and it got good reviews all around. So please check that comic out. And that's about it, I think. We're clocking in at an hour, or almost an hour. Of course, I'll be editing the crap out of this after I'm done. Take out all those uhs out and whatnot. But I hope you've enjoyed this second audio cast. I should get some kind of theme song in the future or whatever. This has been the second edition of My Stack. I'm Stephen G. Saunders, your host. And please drop me a line, steve@mediagauntlet.com. That's steve@mediagauntlet.com. Drop me a line, tell me what you think, give me some suggestions to read, something to review on the site, something to audio review. If you want to send me stuff or whatever, or tell me or order me to go to the store and buy something, drop me a line. And also make sure to catch my weekly column, All the Rage, over at SilverBulletComicBooks.com. And IndieFile, which is a part of the Silver Soapbox, over at SilverBulletComicBook.com as well. Thanks for listening, folks. I hope you've enjoyed this as much as I have. And tune in next time for My Stack here at MediaGauntlet.com. Oh, and a quick postscript for all of you who are still listening. You poor, poor people, you. That Red Sonja comic book I was talking about is issue number 19. Let me check. Checking now. Man, I got a huge stack of stuff here. Why does it have to be at the bottom? Oh, man. Checking, checking, checking. Checking, 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 checking. Ball Ranger. There it is. 19. And remember, read Red Sonja.
Read Red Sonja. No, O Prince. Read Red Sonja.
Is that good enough for you? This is Steve Saunders signing off.